Okay, we'll call the meeting to order, please. We'll start with disclosure of pecuniary interest and general nature thereof. You can speak now or later on during the presentations at a particular item. Can I get a mover and seconder to approve the agenda, please? Councillor Ferguson, Councillor Maiden, all in favor? And we'll move into our special reports for the day and CAO Kelly for introductions.
Thank you, Councillor Daugherty. So this is the first presentation of basically one of the first deliverables from our strategy corporation consultants. So with us today, we have Chris Laredo and Caitlin McClung from Strategy Corp. And they've been working together with their team for a couple of months now on what they're going to present here today, which is the current state analysis. And I know that they're going to go through a couple of components here and give you an idea of how the project is going to unfold. But the purpose of this report really is, just as the title says, current state analysis. So what they're doing is they're presenting what they have as the organization as it sits right now. So here is, without any recommendations to improve or things to move on, it's how the organization is today. Lots of times in these projects, we'll have, you know, the next stage, which is working towards the 2B or the future state. There's all kinds of names you can put on it, but that's the next stage of the project. So they're yet to do that. So I just want to preface that so that, you know, as we're going through things today, if you're expecting that the recommendations have costings attached to them or there's recommendations on particular things to do, we're not quite at that stage yet. So this is a verification, this process that we're going through here today, which is this is what they know of the organization as of today, and they're essentially verifying it by presenting it back to us, and we confirm, yes, this is what we know and what you know. So they are going to point out some things, and there's some interesting things in this. I think it is a good piece of work that they've done, and very happy to have it done. But like I said, this is basically part one. This is not the conclusion or the climax. We're getting to that. So without that, I'll turn it over to Chris, and I think he'll walk us through through the report.
Thank you, Ken and Mr. Chair, members of council. It's a real pleasure to be with you today. I must confess, it's been almost 8 months since I last wore these clothes, and they still fit. So that's always a good sign. And this is my first real trip outside of my home since everything went, since the world went upside down back in mid-March. So it's great to be with you here today and to speak to you about the current state report and our observations and findings coming out of this current state. And Ken is correct in saying, you know, we have things in here called recommendations, but they're more recommendations for the next phase. Here's what we need to look at. Here's what we need to build out. Here's what we need to prove out in terms of, you know, are there efficiency savings to be had? Are there cost savings to be had? Is there better risk management to be had? And so what we want to do with you today is I'm going to take you through a brief presentation. I know everybody was deep into the 150-page long document over the weekend, and we'll spend most of our time answering your questions. But I'll just take you through a bit of an overview. So as you'll recall, we were the successful respondents to a request for proposals to undertake this service delivery review. And you know, what we like to do with our approach is to make sure that we're involving all elements of the organization in helping us understand how the organization's currently functioning, where things are working well, where there are areas for improvement, and then to validate through our own understanding of your documents and strategies and master plans and operating plans, looking at you in the context of you know, the benchmarks that are set for municipalities by the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing, look at you in the context of how you compare to a set of peer comparators that are most like you. There's no such thing as a true apples to apples in the Ontario municipal context, but what we try to do is select comparators in the report that are as close to apples so that we can kind of get a sense of how you compare to municipalities that are like Mississippi Mills. We also, as well, and I think I spoke to most everybody around this table on the phone early in the process, wanted to get your perspectives as to what you saw as working well and what you see as needing improvement and where you see the place going over the next 5 to 10 years. And we worked with Ken and we worked with frontline staff to understand their perspectives on these things as well. And so all that data came together in this current state report to provide us with a sense of, okay, where does the place stand today? Where do we know things are working well? Where do we suspect there are opportunities for improvement that we will then take into the next phase, subject to your critical input and feedback, to build those out to say to you in concrete terms, implementing this set of initiatives will be able to yield for you either cost savings, new revenue opportunities, productivity savings, which frees up staff or asset capacity to be put to higher and better use, or better position the municipality to manage some of the risks that any enterprise has as an operating entity. So those were really the pieces of data that we brought together to get to the report that we have here today. So, you know, you don't hire a consultant, and the purpose of a service delivery review isn't necessarily to tell you that everything's okay and that nothing needs to be done. Inherent in a service delivery review is looking at things quite critically and understanding, you know, if that is what it is today, what could it be tomorrow? So the takeaways that we present here on this slide, and I'll go through in a moment, you know, tend to focus on areas where there are opportunities for improvement. But you should be very proud of where the municipality stands today. Because when you look at yourself both as a standalone against kind of ministry requirements, and when you look at yourselves in the context of your peers, you know, your financial and other positions are strong and trending in the right direction. There may be some peers who have more in reserve funds than you do. They may have, you know, greater liquidity. They may have, a more robust approach to managing how they consume and renew their assets. But you're not in the red. You're firmly in the black, and you're trending in the right direction in all the major categories that are of concern to the ministry or should be of concern to you as councillors. So that's a credit to this council and to the team that works here for the municipality. And what I would say is where the opportunities are for improvement are more in the vein of the strategic as opposed to necessarily the operational. And what I mean by that is there's an opportunity here to put in place both the, and I know you're working on a new strategic plan, and the plans that cascade under that, that provide a clear sense of a roadmap for you as policymakers and decision makers, and a clear roadmap for staff and a clear roadmap for the community as to where this place is gonna go, what things we need to do, when we're going to do those things, and how we're going to fund those things. And so there's a lot in our initial recommendations or where we think there's opportunities for improvement, which is put the right plans in place, figure out how you're going to resource those plans to move the place forward. The other piece, while I said it's strategic, and I believe this is strategic, but it has a critical operational impact, is there's a real need to kind of modernize the way you do deliver a lot of services in the municipality. And that means digitizing a lot more and automating a lot more of the functions that are currently being done manually. And we say that recognizing that this is a community, and you've felt it particularly during COVID, where you don't have the greatest broadband access. And so it's not to say that traditional ways of delivering service or accessing services need to go by the wayside, but there is an opportunity to move things forward. You may be interested to know that while folks can pay their property tax bill at the bank, there is a lovely lady in the front office who gets a record sent to her with thousands of transactions that she then has to manually enter into the systems here. In most modern organizations, that is an upload that's done from one system to the other, and then you can actually focus on troubleshooting where the areas are. Where is there an error in the bill? Where is there a mispayment, right? Where has a bill, you know, not been issued? Those types of things. So those are the things we think, you know, particularly from an administrative perspective, are the areas for great opportunity. There will be cost savings associated with those, but what that means is that there will be productivity savings. And so when you have folks who are manually entering data that in any other organization would otherwise be automatically done by the computers for them, and that so they could focus on higher value-added work, like servicing the customer, the productivity savings are going to be even more, because that's going to free up capacity within your existing folks. It may mean as folks retire, you can free up positions to dedicate and redeploy in other areas where there are needs within the organization. And we know, or we suspect, based on our understanding of the organization, there is a need in some critical responsibilities within the corporation. Asset management planning, which we have identified as one of the areas, along with a long-term financial plan, that has to come together better. It's a way of, again, managing how you're going to both save for and finance future capital expenditures. You have the largest road network. You spend the most amongst your peers on that road network. You have some real needs in that road network. How you smooth those out and manage the costs associated with that and the investments need to come together through better planning. You're going to need somebody who has expertise in long-term sustainable asset management to, when you do have a plan in place, actually make that plan come alive. And it's really important from a fiscal perspective to be able to manage that prudently and appropriately. We also think there's an opportunity, and you need capacity from an HR perspective. You're a lean organization, and while there's always quibbling about the numbers, it's pretty clear that, you know, in terms of full-time hires within a municipality, you are by far lower than all your peer comparators that we looked at you against. And that's not to say that's right or wrong. It's to say there is a risk for you from a culture, from a workload, from a succession planning perspective that an HR capacity within the municipality will be able to help you manage. And the way to stay lean is not to say, well, HR is a cost center and therefore we don't need it. It's to say HR is a value center and we need it to keep ourselves lean, to make sure we have the right people in the right places, to make sure that we know if somebody leaves our organization tomorrow through a retirement or a resignation, we have a plan to replace that person. Because there's costs associated with staff burnout. There's costs associated with staff under training. There are costs associated with employee turnover. And those are not necessarily things you always see manifest themselves in the budget process, but those have huge productivity and service quality impacts on an organization. And the people who usually get impacted are not just yourselves as council who rely on staff to help you make the decisions that you do, but it's the end customer who isn't getting their callback or isn't getting their planning approval done, right? Because we don't have enough people or we haven't been able to fill a position. So we see opportunities there. We also see opportunities in terms of communications, both internal communications, but also communications with the public. It's when I started doing these about 8 years ago, a municipality like Mississippi Mills would not have a communications officer. I would say in the last 3 years, it's becoming increasingly unusual to see a municipality, even the size of Mississippi Mills, not to have a communications officer. Because we live in a 24/7 communications environment, right? We live in an environment where if you don't respond to my text or my tweet or my Facebook post within 30 seconds or 3 minutes, you're late, right? And then, you know, just helping the public understand what is going on at council, Where are the road closures? What are the expected future road closures? Those types of things are all, you know, we argue that not only is a communications officer, but there's also communications training capacity that needs to be done in the department, because a communications officer isn't a panacea. But we do see, in terms of what the staff think they know versus what they ought to know about what's going on, what kind of decisions are being made at this table, what kind of decisions are being made by management, there's an opportunity to improve the flow of information. And with the improved flow of information, people feel more invested in the organization, and they have the information they need to make better use of their time in their jobs. So those are the things that we've been finding. So it's the proactive long-term planning and resourcing those plans. It's the lean organization. You got dedicated, hardworking staff. You've got some spots where you're getting remarkable value for money, but you need to be worried about those workforces breaking. Your public works staffing complement on a full-time basis is very lean. Your recreation staff complement on a peer comparator basis, very lean. And those people are jumping through hoops and they're trying to move projects through. And so you benefit from really good staff, but I think you would benefit from a little bit more capacity. And that just doesn't, like I said, that's not just additional bodies, that's also modernizing processes, modernizing the use of technology in the field. Your public works folks only have 2 iPads in the field. There's 15 of them. You know, so it's, you're running into situations where information that ought to be captured for the purposes of understanding work that needs to be done or work that has been done to inform your asset management plan and to know where the state of an asset is at, isn't always being captured because you're relying on somebody to have taken the notes and have passed those notes off for them to be inputted, as opposed to being able to input it automatically on the spot with an iPad and a more enhanced GIS program. We also think there's an opportunity to strengthen the relationship between staff, council, and the community. We did hear through our conversations with yourselves and with staff and members of committees, and some, we also in this instance spoke to a number of end user groups who think that there is an opportunity to continually help council and staff understand their roles and responsibilities, and you know, the value that is to be created and the action that is to be executed when we know what the role of governance and what the role of administration is and how those work together. We also know that governance is not something that happens once every 4 years with an onboarding presentation, which our understanding is you didn't really even get as council last time around, given the flux that was going on in the organization. Governance is something you always have to work at, and we always like to counsel councils to say, governance is within your control, right? You should be making time and space to have staff or have outside experts come in and present to you on stuff that's very complicated, right? You almost need a PhD in physics to understand municipal finance. It's not easy. It can be archaic at time. Much like we would advise any board of directors, we advise councils, you know, bring in professionals every once in a while. If there's a particular element of, you know, finance you want to understand better, bring them in, right? So a particular element of provincial legislation or planning act or building code, bring them in, right? It's within you to consistently raise your game so that you're in a position to provide better oversight and guidance and direction to staff. We also think from a governance perspective, there's an opportunity to improve the community structure, the committee structure. I don't think we heard overwhelming satisfaction about the structure and how it's working. And we heard that from yourselves, and we heard that from the committees themselves. There's a need to, from our perspective, the committees are creatures of council. Some are statutorily required, get that, but they are ultimately creatures of you. And there is an opportunity here, and there's a need for council to provide clearer mandates and directions as to what you want those committees to do and to work on and to achieve, and also help those committees understand that you play an important role in helping us, but your role is to advise and recommend to us. You're not to replace us. And I think through your strategic plan, one of the things you ought to be looking at with your committee structure is to say, this is our strategy that we have agreed to as a community and as a council. How are we going to delegate certain of these responsibilities or priorities and have the committees focus on it? There are instances where committees don't have much direction from this table and so are making things up or going in their own direction. And that is actually creating staff time and pressure, which draws away from what you think ought to be the priorities for the municipality. So if we can better align and have clearer mandates, better align council direction to those, and better facilitate the relationship between council and its committees, I think you'll have much stronger governance and more action-oriented governance through your committee structure that'll help you certainly realize what you're going to come forward with in your strategic plan. The other thing is, I did mention some, you know, service constraints in terms of capacity. The one other area where we notice a significant capacity constraint, in addition to communications, asset management, planning works, is in your treasury department, in your finance function. You have, it's unusual for a municipality of this size to not have a deputy treasurer. It makes sense from a succession planning perspective. It also makes sense in terms of making sure that the day-to-day transactional operational things are getting done and that the strategic long-term financial management of the place is also being done. And right now you have one person who's responsible for both and she doesn't have a 2IC and the clerks that work for her are wonderful people, but they're not CAs. They're not finance professionals in the sense of what you need in a deputy treasurer and a treasurer. So there's risk there that, you know, through a little additional capacity we think could make a difference. So we have 32, just so you know, in most of these things we're doing, it's around 30 recommendations and they're not all the same, so we're not playing that game. But you know, it's a lot. Some of them though are things that you just ought to be doing as a matter of good hygiene or best practice. Some of them are things you already have in flight, right? So, you know, we're here to say keep on going, that's the right direction. And then there are other things that involve more study and more detailed analysis in order to make a final recommendation to you as to what improvement opportunities you ought to pursue. And so we take what we call a target operating model approach to the 30 some odd recommendations that we have. And we've grouped them into categories of governance and strategy, people and culture, processes and technology, and service delivery. And what we're proposing to do in the next phase is to take these 32 recommendations and actually group them into these four target operating model buckets and build them up as initiatives and be able to come back to you and say, from a governance perspective, here are the improvements we think you should make. And this is what it's going to yield in terms not only of qualitative stuff like improved decision making, but what does this mean in terms of people's capacity to get things done? We're going to look at the organization as part of the governance and strategy, and the people and culture. Look at it more holistically. So we've identified some holes. The last thing we would want to do, and one of the worst things that usually happens in the municipal sector, is you get these Frankenstein org charts that are a product of 20, 30, 40 years of people just adding boxes to the place without thinking through like functions together, right? Because like functions being together means you can get more out of the capacity you have and you can streamline your processes, kill two birds with one stone. Are these the spans of control appropriate? I've been in places where the CAO has 18 direct reports. It's a bit ridiculous, right? And so we're going to look at, you know, where we think you need capacity, and we're going to look at it holistically. And in combination with the last part of the target operating model, which is which is looking at the technological modernization, say, if you modernize these processes, what could that free up in terms of boxes on that org chart to fill for those competencies we think you're going to need for the long term, or for the you know, the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years of the place? And if we technology won't free up everything, we'll come to you and say, you need X net new positions, or you need net new capacity in order to deliver on some pretty critical areas. And then lastly, we're also going to look at contracted services. You contract a fair amount of services. It's one thing to contract services, it's another thing to make sure you're getting the value out of those contracts. And who has strategic management of those contracts? And when it comes time to renew contracts, who's making the conscious decision as to whether or not we're better off to have contracted that out? And are there things we can do to fine-tune our contract to get better value? Or should we have it in-house? Or should we have it as a shared responsibility with a neighboring municipality or maybe the county? One particular area we're going to look at from a contracting services review is winter road maintenance and control. We have started discussions with the county to understand their perspective on things. We did hear through interviews with you frustrations about when blades go up and when blades go down and how much time it takes to get things cleared and why is a county truck coming through and not clearing the snow. So we're going to look at what makes most sense. Continue to contract it out. Do it yourself, have the county do it, or you do it for the county. So we're going to look at those things. And in these four buckets, of which a number of recommendations are grouped, we'll come back and be able to tell you, here's what the initiatives look like, here's what you can expect from a cost savings perspective, a productivity savings perspective, in some cases a revenue generation perspective, or failing those things, what does this mean from your ability to manage certain risks of the municipality? And so after today, we'll get into that next phase. We'll work that up and we'll bring it back to you, I think, mid-September. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions, comments at this point? Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you very much. First of all, I commend you for the amount of material put together in the short period of time you had. So there's a lot of reading there. I believe you have read it.
Excellent.
Microphone, please, Councillor Ferguson. Sorry.
Page 6, which again you addressed your 32 improvement opportunities / overviews. Out of that, I read that there's 6 cost savings and 16 value added. Now, will they be prioritized when we enter into the September time frame for the final report, or the?
So what we're doing is we're grouping like recommendations that fall under one of the target operating model things together. So will we prioritize cost savings over productivity savings over? No, what we are going to say is, if you implement these recommendations to improve your people and culture, here's what it nets out in terms of savings and or new revenue opportunities and or just your ability to manage risk. We'll be working, what we want to do is leave you with the information to decide, is the cost benefit strong enough there? And we'll make we'll advise you that the cost benefit says you ought to do this, but it'll be up to you to decide if the cost benefit's strong enough to pursue some of these initiatives.
But can I assume that cost savings would be relatively high in the pecking order of final recommendations?
Yes, right, okay. Unless the only reason it wouldn't is if we think there is a serious risk exposure. Yes. You're out of compliance statutorily, whatever it might be, or there's a potential for it. It's not costing you anything now, but if you don't pay attention to it, it will cost you in the future.
Okay. Deputy Mayor Minnelli, please. Oh, sorry.
Are you wanting us to go through all of this report? Are you going to, as we walk it through, like we're in the first three or four pages, how do you want us to approach the questions?
Just ask away. I understand we have sufficient time to ask questions. If there's specific feedback, we're happy to take it as well, or you can always reach out to us, as I said when we had our phone discussions, reach out to us with specific feedback as well.
How many do I have, sir? I can, you know, I don't want to overtake, but a couple, and then maybe come back with some other ones.
Yeah,
is that reasonable?
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, on page 21, the very bottom one, and you alluded to it, the committee structure. Again, will you be elaborating more on your next report in reference to the committee structures? Because I totally agree with what you said. And also reading forward, we are probably heavier in committees than any of our comparators.
Yes, and we'll come back and say, so as you can see, we'll probably be coming back to say, you know, my view is you're going to need a basic policy on committees that defines when you create committees, how you mandate committees, how you resource those committees, not just with volunteers, but with staff resources, and then how you define the accountability relationship of those committees to this table. So we'll lay all that out and tell you, you know, from, you know, it may still be 16 committees,
right?
But, you know, here's how you strengthen the linkage and you strengthen their alignment with what you as council have determined are the priorities for the term.
Okay, thank you. So that's, I have more, but that's really cool.
Okay.
Thank you.
Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
Thank you very much for the reading for the weekend. Appreciate it. You mentioned just a couple of quick questions there.
Yeah, please.
Not even questions, maybe not. You mentioned reserves. So most of our reserves are slated for a project.
Mm-hmm.
So with every reserve, it's going to be an increased debt. Do you realize? You know that, right? So the reserves that we have for projects, like we bundle all our reserves together and say, oh, we got $7 million. Well, some of that's slated for the library.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough money to pay for the library. So with every reserve comes debt.
In terms of you have to borrow because you don't have sufficient.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we recognize that. And what there's a few things, Deputy Mayor. One is your reserve policy is very light. It needs to have more definition, particularly how you're going to capitalize capital reserves. Relative to your peers, you have higher debt because you're paying for projects without reserves being in place. And the reason that is because we believe you need to attach your long-term asset management plan and your long-term financial plan so that everything's laid out. So in municipalities that are more advanced in the use of asset management and long-term finance planning, they will know for the next 10 years, not to say council can't change decisions, but based on the asset management plan and the condition of those assets and the risk assessment around those assets and the demand around those assets, they will know for the next 10, 15, sometimes 20 years, what projects are going, how much, you know, they're going to cost, and then linked with the financial plan, how we're going to either finance those or save to pay for those, right? Because right now, you're right, you have relatively insufficient reserves, certainly less than your peers, and you have projects, and you've had lots of spikes in your recent years, and that's forcing you to borrow because you don't have, and that carries a cost.
And any grants we usually get from the government usually goes to bridges.
Yeah.
Because we have, like, I don't know, 15
a lot of bridges.
I'm not sure, 15 or 16 or I don't know. And so do you think sharing HR people with the county is part of your, are you going to look into that too?
Yeah, we are going to look at it. You know, so the challenge in this particular county, and we're working in a number of other lower tiers and with counties where there's a more openness in a lot of those, you know, kind of supporting back office resources are being made available to lower tiers. We aren't sure of the appetite of this county to do that. We will certainly explore that. Our preference is, particularly for municipalities of your sizes, you can kind of get the capacity and the scale at the same time if the upper tier or if a group of municipalities can come together and share and pool those resources, right? So we will be looking at that, yes.
And just one comment, you can have an org chart with spaces in it, you know that, eh? Like, it's kind of a joke around
here. Oh, okay.
Thank you.
You good? Councillor Maiden.
Thank you. I just had a couple comments. With the asset management initiative, I noticed that throughout the document. And part of, I don't know whether we really have had anything, maybe something on paper for years, but now that the province is requiring it, we have only just sort of jumped on the bandwagon. I don't think it was really a big thing before. But I'm glad to see that. Thank you.
You have a basic one. But yeah.
It doesn't meet the needs of, and you can see that in your capital spending as a result. And the other thing is, you're right, the province has required as a condition of certainly grant funding since 2014.
Okay. My other comment is on my page 61, I don't know if it's yours, but you list the comparators for committees between the different municipalities, and information in there is actually incorrect. Like, for example, I looked at Carleton Place. They have, for example, a library board and a number of other statutory committees that seem to be missing from their list.
Yeah.
We have only 11 that are real committees. The other are memberships on local tribunals, for example, like the Mississippi Valley Conservation Authority. That's not really one of our committees. We don't have any control over that.
Yep.
Our corporations for hydro generation, we're just members. We don't control those. So I think we really only have 11 committees, five of which are statutory.
Yes.
And so I want to make sure you correct that.
Yeah, we will correct that.
We've actually reduced the number of committees from what there was before.
Yep.
And digital implementation is, the opportunities are rife everywhere, and yep. I'm glad to see that also. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Holmes.
Thank you so much. I'm impressed with the work you've done. I do have a few questions, so I'll just ask a couple right now. On page 33, you talk about a tolerance level for the municipal's year-end cash deficit surplus. Just tell me what that means, sort of.
It means how much are you comfortable sweeping to reserves when you have a surplus. So your current policy on reserves, particularly in the capital side, is not terribly specific, which is fine if council wants to. But you have to make conscious policy decisions that, you know, we're going to build our capital reserve to this, and this is going to be the acceptable, you know, kind of our tolerance for any surplus before we say either we're going to reinvest surplus monies within year or, you know, rebate the taxpayer.
Okay, thank you. And on page 35, talking about roads and public works, you talk about having a dedicated asset management resource for that area. Again, could you just speak to what you see that as being?
Yeah. So in a number of municipalities, they'll have an asset management. Either a technician, or in some larger, they'll actually have a manager responsible for asset management, and they're responsible for the asset management plan and the implementation of that plan. So they work closely with infrastructure services or works, depending on the municipality, to make sure that everything's up to date in that plan and that the things that are coming forward for council for capital funding are matched to what's set out in that plan. So it's a specific skill set.
Any more questions at this time? Councillor Ferguson.
So are we just doing questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, please.
Okay. Good. Okay. Page 22, under growth should pay for growth. Now, is that
is it realistic and is it sustainable? Are we trying to accomplish a 0% tax increase? Or, you know, I know where you're coming from, I think, but is that really something that is achievable?
So we haven't looked at that in any depth. What we have identified is a couple things. We know you've done some things on development charges to try to attract commercial and industrial investment. We know that you're heavily weighted, and it's not unusual, particularly in your peer group, heavily weighted towards the residential class.
Right.
So, you know, in terms of, you know, the longer term future of the place, trying to the best of your ability, knowing that there are macro factors that are involved in this, that not everything's within your control, is to try to diversify that assessment base as a way of taking pressure off the residential base. Now, the issue is, you know, what's the trade-off between DC relief to try to incent things versus trying to recover our costs because we know we're growing and we have to cover those costs? What you've had a DC study recently, and so we leave it to that study to answer that question. You have a policy decision to make as council. We won't be delving into that, but we did note it because people have said we're growing pretty fast. We got pressures that shouldn't all be borne by the existing residents.
On page 33 again, Councillor Holmes referred to it, number 17, where it says opportunity. And certainly, again, I agree with what you've said, should finance be running the daycare? And I guess the next question on top of that then, should the municipality be running a daycare? I guess, well, is that something that you would look at further down the road?
Probably not, okay. Unless we were directed to. It's not uncommon for municipalities to run daycares, particularly if there isn't a sufficient private or not-for-profit base to provide that services. Our understanding is that your program is very well subscribed, so you're hitting capacity. You have expansion pressures on the service. There will come a point at which you say, you know, can we do much more? Do we need to figure out a way to incent private or not-for-profit operators to be in the community? But there's nothing that we see there. We don't see huge accounts arrears or anything like that that we would say it's a business problem for you right now. But it is a pressure on you. Yep.
And a general question. The comparators, did you look at the breakdown between rural and urban mix? I know that obviously Kempville is, but
yes,
there's many that are not, correct? Like Carlton Place is not. So
no.
Did you look at that and run the comparators against that as well?
Yes.
It is.
So,
okay.
Caitlin, I don't have the slide in front of me, but we had five or six
yes.
criteria that we used. One of that was the nature of the geographic character. Carlton Place is theirs because it's an immediate neighbor.
Right, yeah.
And so we figured there, you know, it can often be a point of comparison, even though it may not be a fair comparator across the board. So we tried to get, if you look at it, we looked at it in terms of size and composition, proximity to a major city, amalgamated communities, mm-hmm. non-seasonal economic activity. I can't speak, and population size. So in the size and composition, that's where we factor in the geography.
Because it always takes on a difference if you're...
Yeah, and you can see that, like, you know, in works, for instance.
Absolutely.
Right? You and Loyalist, I think, have the most, and you're 25 or 30 lane kilometers more than Loyalist. The others are more compact and have less of a road network, but there are other situations, you know, in terms of service scope and things of that, where you're similar, and so it makes sense to compare. So it's directionally correct and probably specifically wrong, because there is no
right.
truly apples to apples in
right.
the Ontario
that.
Municipal sector, but it gives us a sense of, you know, if we see some smoke, we can delve into that further. We don't see much smoke.
Can we take one more from Councillor Holmes and then we can ask questions on the fly? Is that okay, Councillor Ferguson? Okay.
Thank you.
Councillor Holmes?
Thank you. I'm interested in the on page 29, you talk about stranded capital. Could you explain to me what that means?
So there's a concept in finance called stranded capital. So essentially it means that you've sunk dollars in that aren't into an asset that isn't generating a return. And so which opportunity was it? Sorry. Okay, sorry. Let me just go to it to be more specific. Mm-hmm. And it's opportunity four? It's opportunity four?
Yeah.
Where does it say it?
Councillor Holmes, you said opportunity four. It's the communications one.
No worries.
Can you turn on your microphone, please?
Sorry, it's opportunity six.
Okay.
Oh,
so in this case, if you have people doing low value work, and you have capacity dedicated to that, it's kind of the equivalent of having, you know, it's not the highest and best use of your dollar, is right. And so it's stranded capital in the sense that you can't get the full value out of that position because they're trapped doing manual processes, things that could otherwise be uploaded between computer systems. Require a manual entry, so that's the analogy. So I apologize for the confusion, but it's basically you're not getting the highest and best value for that resource if you don't modernize the process.
Okay.
And I'm also interested in your comments about utilizing bylaw with the fire department to help with some of their. Their inspections and whatnot. Could you just elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure.
Do you want to speak?
It's an area that.
You want to speak? To
We do have the benefit of having the chief here, so I may have to call on him. We heard this, there is an opportunity here to increase enforcement, and there's a need to. And I think we recognize that as part of the hope for the master plans that are coming down the line, that this would get addressed. In other municipalities, there is a bit more of a coordination that happens around bylaw enforcement, and we hope that should we proceed with this or continue to look further into it, that there's some lessons learned there around the coordination piece. But we just heard directly, sorry to put you on the spot, from the chief, that it is an area that warrants some more further investigation.
Okay, thank you.
Good. So please carry on.
More questions?
Pardon me?
Well, we're open to more questions.
Okay, is there any more?
Yeah.
Councilor Ferguson?
He's only on page four, guys. Like,
page 44, under rising water and sewer rates, and certainly we're more than competitive, certainly reading through your report in reference to that. So will there be a stronger recommendation moving forward to increasing water and water rates, do you believe?
Not from us. No. What we are going to recommend is that you refresh your water rate study, probably. So I think you lasted at 2015. A lot of municipalities do it kind of every 5-6 years. And, you know, I get the sense that there's a bit of a timing gap between when expenses are incurred and then when revenue is brought, you know, when fees are adjusted to cover that. So our recommendation is just to keep on top of your water rate studies and make sure. The other thing, too, is, you know, I think there's an opportunity through differentiated pricing or where there may be an opportunity to be more equitable in terms of who's charged what. But, again, we'll defer to future water rate studies on what makes sense there.
Okay. Page 57, and it's reflective of more pronounced annual transportation spending, where it's, and I realize we maintain the largest network.
Correct.
But more pronounced in what respect?
Well, most of your capital goes to roads.
Yes, of
and,
course.
And most of it is because you have 376 lane yep. kilometers of road. Mm-hmm. So we're not saying it's an issue. We're just noticing it, right? And it's a reflective of the and the different types of road assets that you have mixed into that those lane kilometers. And so, you know, one of the areas where we think there might be an opportunity, though, is on the winter control and looking at whether or not that can be made more efficient, either through doing, you know, being the contractor to the county to yeah. to do it, or to have the county do it, or just have somebody else do it altogether.
Okay, good, thank you. See, that one's been as page 86. Administration profile, let's say. Oh, sorry, page 86, yep, sorry.
Administrative profile,
yeah. And I must have a page out of order, I think. Oh, there it is. Sorry about that.
Oh. 74, thank you.
Oh, okay. So we're different. We're working on different pages, or no?
No, they don't have our agenda package.
So oh, sorry about that.
We're
sorry.
Pages behind. That's what I figured.
Oh, okay. So I'm all right.
But it's not showing. It's not showing.
Okay. My page 86 then is specifically the police services. Again, when you're reviewing the comparators, did you address city/town police services versus OPP contracts? Because I think there's a significant difference.
In terms of costs?
Well, not necessarily cost, but in management and requirements to manage. Is that something that you would have?
Because no.
In two cases here, mm-hmm. it's the delivery is outdated and the service is unsatisfactory.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, in your first one, in the delivery with an OPP contract, you have very, very little management as opposed to a city or town police
Correct.
Force.
Correct. Right? So contracted out versus your own force.
Yes, yes. Absolutely.
No, we didn't, and it wasn't on our work plan to look at that in detail. We do know of a number of municipalities that we're working with for whom they've made the decision to put out RFPs to, you know, in the case of the, I think it's the town of Leamington is, you know, putting out an RFP to see if Windsor will bid on it. That's but it's not on our work plan for the next phase, Councillor.
Okay. And then where the service is unsatisfactory, was that service, and you got it from staff, council, and the community, did you identify which areas were unsatisfactory?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Okay.
It's just no.
Okay.
Okay. Also, because it's not specific at this point how you would measure that.
Right, I agree.
So, yeah. Not to get too far into it, but I guess one of the ways, if should there ever be a review or moving forward with a different model, understanding the goals and what the
community needs and how the contractors
would be
that.
Important.
Right. Okay. No, that's fine. Thank you. Are they move on or? Okay. Okay. Page 105. Jumping ahead a little bit, unfortunately. Okay. Sorry. It's a. It's in Rec and Culture.
93.
Oh, 90, okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah, please.
Okay, where it's parks and outdoor spaces. Mm-hmm. As you probably found out, we have a significant acreage in park land, per se, mm-hmm. which obviously takes up significant dollars for maintenance from the rec department in reference to that, ongoing maintenance and staff time. Again, will that be expanded on as to the, I suppose, the viability of having that many acres for land and new parks coming on board or no? Will that be expanded on or no? Is that
no? Where we're going to focus in on this in the next phase is relative to your peers, you're under recovering from a fee perspective for rec services, so we want to look at that. And to, you know, there's always this challenge and this balance that councils have in terms of how much should be subsidized off the property tax base and how much should be recovered through user fees. So we're going to look at that. Our operating hypothesis on this is that you may need to add some programming capacity to increase utilization, to increase fee revenue. I also think, given the way the community is changing and how hard it is, you know, for some local groups to find the volunteer person power to actually do some things, mm-hmm. that there may be some value to be added by the municipality more proactively programming its facilities. So that's what we'll be looking at in the next, okay. in the next phase.
And then I guess my last ones, it's addressing pages 108, 109, 110, and it's specifically to fire and safety prevention and service, mm-hmm. and we're it's not meeting legislative requirements. Mm-hmm. Municipality is not compliant with provincial guidelines. Do you see that right now as an existing liability, potential liability, I should qualify
that? For
sure.
Anytime you're not compliant with provincial statute, your risk exposure goes from amber to red, right?
Yes.
And so what we're of the belief is we think there's some synergies, for to use a bad consulting word, but we think there's some opportunity with bylaw enforcement. But what you really need is through the fire master planning process to understand what you're, you know, really set out how you're going to manage your provincial compliance, and then understand how you're going to how you're going to program and resource those things that are discretionary to the force.
Okay.
Right. So you need a fire master plan.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know the chief is working on that, so yeah. It's, you know, I'm...
Yeah, so anytime you're at a, you know, are you at risk tomorrow? No, but, you know, if for whatever reason smoke detectors haven't been inspected in certain facilities for a while and a fire breaks out and somebody gets hurt or worse, then, you know, eyes and certain firearms are going to be turned towards the town, right?
Right, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. One of the deepest pockets, eh?
Come on. Yep, it's a liability. It's a liability risk management issue. Yep.
Right. Yep. Good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. That's all I have.
No, thank you for reading it.
Oh, I did.
Councillor Maiden.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could explain something. It's on my page 45, okay. Under themes and key findings. Small land and land improvement expenditures. It says that we maintain only marginal proportions of our capital assets as land-related initiatives, 1.9%, less than a quarter of its nearest peer, North Grenville, which has 9.6. This may be in part due to a shortage of developable land. Could you expand on what that means?
So our hypothesis on why that number is, and staff may be able to back me up on it, is because you're getting close to being out of developable land. You have developable land that's already serviced. You've already made those investments, and there isn't much more for you to do. In some of these other municipalities, they're servicing more land to support more development. Therefore, their capital expenditures on those types of activities are higher. So it's not to say it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just it may be low expenditures because you're a hot market right now. I don't know if that's fair, Ken.
Councillor Holmes.
I mean, sorry.
Go ahead.
Just to kind of follow along on that, I mean, yes, this is, I think, not an unknown issue to council. You do have a project before you, which is the Official Plan Amendment 22 that we're trying to progress in, which is to bring in more developable land to address some of those issues. This one in relation to land holdings of the municipality itself, correct?
I have to double check that, Ken. I'll check that.
Yeah. As we've been working through things, I mean, you know that we're trying to bring forward opportunities for additional lands to be brought on stream, to be brought to market for developable purposes. Those are some things we do look at our at the land holdings of the municipality in terms of those that we might be able to declare surplus or put out to market and further deal with this. But I will tell you that we have heard from the development community that they do believe that they are running short of opportunities within the municipality to continue at their current rate of business, I guess we won't say business growth or business expansion, but business activity. And that they are concerned that there's not a lot of land left. And what that does mean is that when you have a lot of players chasing land, you have an increase in price. And if we are talking about affordable housing, the first thing we can't start off with is really high land prices, because that doesn't bode well for affordable housing. So, it does trickle down, and I hear what they're saying that we are running out, but it does have implications in terms of our activity, in terms of what our building department will be able to handle, and what we're going to do there, and what impacts it has in the affordable housing component as well. So this is a key item for council to turn its eye to for the provision of appropriate direction in terms of what you want to do.
And Councillor Ken's correct. It is your own land holdings as a municipality. So any plots or parcels held by and what investments or spending you have on those. So I apologize for that.
Okay. Councillor Holmes.
Thank you. On page 36, key performance indicators on your numbers, not our agenda numbers. You mentioned that Mississippi Mills replaces existing assets with a high degree of frequencies as demonstrated by the consistently high asset sustainability ratio. Can you just speak to that? In where are we replacing our assets too frequently? And
what page is that? No, 32, but it's 34. Yeah, no, I think your ratio is higher probably because of the accelerated spending you've been doing in capital. So you're refurnishing or bringing on more new road, refurbishing roads faster than you're consuming them. So what it means is a lot more of your assets are in newer condition. So it just speaks and it's reflected in the capital numbers, the volume of spend you've had lately, mm-hmm. and what that means in terms of how much new you're putting in versus consuming it and replacing it gradually over time.
So just to follow up, you've said we may be overly aggressive.
So our view is that you're not properly planned, not that you're being overly aggressive. You have a lot of projects that need to be done. You still have a lot of projects in the pipeline. What I think you've been doing over the last number of years is trying to play catch up for, I think, probably the previous 5 years where you saw spending really decline. And what we're saying is that's not sustainable. And to the deputy mayor's point, if you don't have sufficient reserves, you have to borrow.
Exactly.
And you're increasing your debt, right? So what we're saying through a long-term asset management plan is to have that spend smoothed out and match with a financing plan that ensures that it's sustainable and you're not looking back and say we did all this, but look at what we're holding at the end of the day.
Okay. And also on the next page, debt sustainability. The municipal debt burden per household, does that include water and sewer debt as well?
Yeah, so the town debentured or financed the water plant, right? So that would be in that number.
Okay. And just one final
question. And I think that's what we attribute, like you've had some major capital investments.
Okay, so you've essentially taken that and...
Yeah.
And averaged it out over the whole
just to give us a rough
easy
comparator.
Okay, and then one last question: your municipal debt burden as a percentage of reserves and reserve funds. Do you see this as
problematic,
acceptable, or is it too high?
No, like, so it's so I don't think your debt is problematic. I think the ad hoc way you're going about capital planning and investment is what's problematic, because it's not problematic now, but it could be in the future if you don't kind of get that under control and are more disciplined as to how you make your investments and how you finance those investments, whether through, right? So I think you're fine now. You know, would you like it to be lower? Yes, but it's also, you know, your debt charges as a percentage of your annual repayment limit are trending down. You're in good shape. You're not at risk right now. The main message here is long-term asset management planning linked to financial planning, absolutely critical, so that you know what needs to be invested in and how that investment's going to happen and how you're going to be able to afford that.
One more question.
So just one more question, then. You've mentioned that we need to develop these various plans. In your experience, starting where we are now to where we have to get, what do you see as a time frame until we can have those in place?
So my understanding is a new or an updated long-term financial plan is under development by the Treasurer. And I think you're about to undertake a refresh of the asset management plan. So, you know, those things should take, you know, no more than a couple years to put in place. But you as council will really want to understand the relationship between the two. What is our approach going forward for getting to do our capital investments in a way that is sustainable and quite frankly, you know, fair to current taxpayers and fair to future taxpayers as well. So it's important. And so, you know, I know people often get impatient with plans, but, you know, strategic plan sits on top of the OP and your master plans, which sit on top of your operational plans that for the municipality and its departments, and then the work plans annually and how things get done. It's really important to have those things and have those things fit together and be on top of them over time so that they're always working. It makes decision-making a whole lot clearer in the future, as opposed to feeling like you have to start from the beginning every budget cycle.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Lowry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Chris. I think this is an excellent document, and I appreciate seeing the comparators as well as the performance indicators from MMAH in there, and the breakdown by department as well of the service evaluation grids. I think this is all really helpful information for us to digest what we're looking at here. I had actually two pages of questions, but a lot of them have been answered already. So I was kind of sitting back so other people had a chance. So I have a few, but if you want to, you know, do as you wish to
go ahead,
ask other people their questions too, feel free. One question that I'm wondering about, and it's somewhat related to, I'll try to give both the slide and the page number, somewhat related to slide 32, which is page 44. In the document, so we have updating to do with the asset management plan, as you've been saying. There's training of council to happen, so there's a lot of foundation pieces that are needing to come into place. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if you have any comments, or if we would see any comments in the final document about being able to move towards multi-year budgeting, and if you see that as something that would be advantageous to how we are making decisions and then and essentially providing service, whether it's just the capital side or whether it's the both.
Short answer is yes, definitely on the capital side.
Yeah.
And maybe even some change. And I apologize if staff are already doing that, but just even in terms of when capital approvals happen, so that you can take advantage of getting into the market earlier, as opposed to. So when we did it in Pembroke, you know. Capital decisions were being deferred into the calendar year, which meant they were hitting the market with their tenders when the market was tapped out. So they'd have price inflation. So we recommended that they actually move capital approvals for the next year to the fall of the upcoming fiscal year, so that they could get tenders out earlier and get, you know, when the contractors are hungry. That's a bit of a tangent, but it's just, you know, yes, multi-year, and also then plan when you're going to market, so you're getting the best value. On the operating side, I'm generally a fan of multi-year budgeting, but we'll take that away, Your Worship, and look at that. We've worked with other municipalities looking at doing that. It always helps to understand the trade-offs you're making between spending decisions today and spending decisions tomorrow, or and sometimes it allows you to say, okay, we'll do this today, but let's put this and begin to book this a couple years out so that we're not losing sight of it. So I tend to like it. If it's good enough for senior levels of government, it should be good enough for municipal government as well.
Keep going.
Yep.
Let's see. I had a question. I think it's page, if I can even read my own writing here. I think it's slide 20. Let me just take a look. Get there. Yes, slide 20, page 32. And I think, in a sense, you've touched on this one. It's opportunity number 14.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you can expand on this, the idea of a new economic development strategy, and certainly the goal of attracting new business is I think important to all of us, attracting new business and helping existing businesses expand.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if you can just provide a little bit more information about that, and then a thought that I had that I wonder if you can comment on as well, is this is currently under the CAO sort of administration banner, and I wonder if you have any thoughts in terms of the HR, the org chart that we've been talking about, in terms of having an EDO in place, or I mean, we do have a member of staff with about 18 hats on that does do economic development, but if you have any thoughts in terms of growing the position in such a way that there would be more capacity to take on some of these
In terms of EDO capacity, we'll take that away and look at it. We know that Tiffany is, whatever the demand is, she steps up to the plate, but she gets a lot requested of her, and we heard that from the committees, some of the committees she works with as well. So what 14 is really saying is economic development isn't successful if it's siloed, and so you need a kind of whole of government, to use my provincial speak, a whole of government approach. So economic development, yes, but what can we be doing from a planning perspective? What can we be doing from a works perspective or a capital investment perspective? What can we be doing just even in terms of, what we're doing to make the place a destination? What across the enterprise, what can various departments contribute to a meaningful package that helps with economic development and attraction? That means that, while you may have somebody whose job is economic development, he or she knows that it's an expectation of the rest of the enterprise to be thinking about what they can be doing from their portfolio responsibilities to enable that.
Appreciate that too, because it's not it's one of those things where being an organization that is driving towards encouraging business, I mean, it's going to hit every department. So I appreciate your comments on that. I'm jumping around a little bit, but what was my next one? Slide 15. So that's page 27 in the agenda. Number 3. So defining and strengthening council's role in terms of that balance between operational and strategic oversight, and then also an earlier point about council really defining the role in terms of policy making. I wonder if there's going to be comments you can either give to us now, or if there be further comments in the final document. What about that circular relationship in terms of we have advisory committees, what's their role versus what's the role of outside experts or staff?
Yep.
You have touched on the pressure point or the extra resources and time that staff are having to input there, but I'm wondering if you can just comment on that, I guess, circular relationship, as I say, of staff and outside experts, where those advisory committees fit in, and how council leads what that policymaking role looks like. Additional training is probably part of this as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if you can provide a little bit more there, or if we would be seeing more of that in the final.
So definitely seeing more of that.
Okay.
And articulating how all those pieces need to hang together. There's a right time and a place for all those. So when I used to work at McDonald's as a kid, we had this saying, put their aces in their places, right? So part of this is, you know, who are our aces and what places, and let's make sure that they do those jobs. Our sense of things, particularly, you know, given the council committee structure relationship, is it's not working optimally. It can work better, and the strategic plan will help with that. But respecting each other's role, part of respecting each other's role is telling each other what we expect of you, right? So. You know, we've heard stories that, you know, sometimes, you know, council can be pretty rough on staff. And, you know, we always have to check back with ourselves and say, and part of good governance is saying, okay, so what was it that we were expecting that we didn't get? Did we ask for it? If not, can we learn from that and make sure next time that we're more explicit to staff in terms of what we need to see to support our decision making, right? So that little things like that. That's why I view, you know, governance isn't, you know, and training isn't a once every 4 year thing. It's a constant iterative thing, right? You know, understand, and the other side, staff have to be proactive in saying, council, what can we do better? What are you? What do you expect to see, and you're not seeing? What do we need to be providing you? So, regular training, and you're well within your purview to say. In addition to staff advice, we'd like some external advice on this. You may refer that to a committee to provide that advice. You may ask that professionals or additional professional outside professionals be hired, but you know it's all in that vein of continuous improvement. I do a lot of work with boards. It's annual, right? It's every meeting we do a critical self-reflection. How did we perform? How did staff perform? Did we accomplish what we needed to in that meeting? What can we do better next time? What information do we need to be, you know, to enable our decision making or whatever, right? So through our work with municipalities, we're trying to encourage more of that. I don't want to call it a private sector orientation. I would just say a, you know, good governance orientation around. It's not once every 4 years. It's not an onboarding presentation and you're done. It's something you have to continually work at, and that's within council's control. Staff can't do that for you. It's within your control to do that.
Okay. Thank you for that, Chris. I have a couple more, but if you want
sure.
to go to
Is there anybody others? Anybody else who wants to throw a question in here?
Go ahead. We'll fix it up. That's
okay. Go ahead, Councilor Ferguson.
Thank you.
Come back.
To get back to the comparators again,
mm-hmm.
did you review on the comparators, is there any of them that have an additional revenue stream? You know, we're very fortunate in Mississippi Mills that we held on to our hydro, so mm-hmm. it does provide us with revenues.
Yep.
Some of your comparators sold theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So will there be some comment on that specifically too? Because that somewhat may offset at the time our appetite for extended capital purchases in addition to low interest rates at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that does that balance off somewhat, and as you're moving forward with your
sorry, Councillor.
No, that's no problem.
Okay, should shut up now.
Does that kind of balance off some of the discussion in your report, as a final report, that some of those factors would?
So we'll look at specific revenue opportunities. I mentioned the recreation one a moment ago. What we did notice was, in terms of revenue diversity, you know, you're not that far off. You're a little high in terms of your reliance on the residential, on property tax, and mainly residential. What we noticed, and what we tried to understand a bit is, you know, Carleton Place, you know, has substantial kind of non-property tax revenues, and that's development charges, that's fees. user fees, it's other things. So we won't be opining about necessarily, you know, here's the whole suite of, you know, potential revenue streams you should look at. There are a couple things we've focused in, which is assessment-based diversification, and then making sure that you are recovering or doing more to recover costs through things like recreation fees. That's what we'll be looking at.
You made reference to assessment-based diversification. You know, we've been trying as long as I've been a counselor, which is probably too damn long.
Yep.
But to arrive at that, but we're impacted by the fact, well, geography impacts us.
Geography impacts it.
Our competition with comparators, obviously, big box stores versus our choice not to go that route. So all of those factor into our lack of commercial assessment.
Correct.
Which
yep.
significantly has an impact.
No, and so much, and I fully recognize a lot of this is out of your control, right? And the macroeconomic and other factors that are out of your control. What we see in other places that grew fast and, you know, not overgrow, but, you know, are disproportionately geared towards property tax revenues from the residential property class is they get into these problems where the residential taxpayers had enough, but the cost pressures and the expectations aren't stopping. And so it's not a problem for you now, you yet, right? You're growing, you continue to build, you know, building permits or, you know, residential and all that. But I think it's important over the long term, and all the more reason why the long-term financial plan's important is part of that is saying, we know we're growing this way, and you know, unless God blesses us with a super highway through which everybody wants to, you know. We have to be mindful of not getting ourselves stuck like some other municipalities where it's like, oh, the residential growth's done and the residential taxpayer doesn't want to pay anymore. Right.
Good point.
Yeah.
Mayor Lowry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just have two more, and they're both sort of HR oriented here. The first is, what is the first one here? It's opportunity number 19, which is on slide 22 or page 34 of the agenda package. And the opportunity is to explore the function of the facility's maintenance as a standalone service. And I wonder if you have a comment, or we again might be seeing this in the final a little bit later. We do have a facilities manager, but the position is also got a safety, I can't remember what the title is, safety component.
Yep.
I wonder if it would make sense for that to perhaps, the capacity there to grow, to be more focused on facilities management. And I wonder too if there's, we know we're lean and we know that there's the HR piece is something we've been talking about. And I wonder if it's a fit to have some of the workplace safety pieces perhaps align with an HR
yes.
role.
Yeah, absolutely. There is. And then on the facilities management piece, I guess the point is twofold there. One, it's a bit of a, you know, you have somebody responsible, but it's a bit of a distributed function as well.
Yes.
Certainly the library is expected to do their own. It's a specific skill set, mm-hmm. right? God knows you wouldn't want me to maintain your facilities. But having that be an enterprise service, having a locus of expertise, and that may just be an individual whose full-time job it is to look after the facility, you know, facilities of the entirety of the municipality, probably makes better sense in terms of maintaining the assets. Because poorly maintained assets end up costing you more in the long run. And then you don't have people trying to manage facilities off the corner of their desk, and for which this is not what they were trained to do.
That's right.
Or manage multiple contracts. Like,
yeah.
There's definitely an opportunity that we saw for, you know, leveraging contracts. So you'll probably see a bit of that.
Okay. Perfect. And my last question, actually about fire and bylaws. So this was your number 31 opportunity. So slide 26 and page 38. And we see next door that fire and bylaw are managed under protective services. And I wonder if that's kind of where where you're thinking with this, or if it's more just of a closer relationship between those two services, the fire service and bylaw. If you're expecting to bring something forward that would have recommendations of bylaw moving in-house or continuing contractual basis as we've been, just wondering where you're expecting to go with that, or if it's a little early to say.
I think it's a little early to say.
Okay, that's fair.
We will be looking at those elements of it. I mean, at the very basic level, it's, you know, if all we had were the resources we have today, it's how can we coordinate and use bylaw enforcement to support some of our compliance requirements under the various statutes.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would you, I understand you'd like to take a break in between?
No, I was joking about that.
Well,
I went 3 hours once, it's fine. You need a break.
Would members of council like a short recess to get some fresh air? Or do you want to keep going?
Or load up with new questions.
Councilor Ferguson, do you need a short break? Or?
I don't know, it's
all right. Okay, we'll carry on then.
Any other questions that we can answer? We're done our presentation, so we're here to answer any
Good.
Questions that you may have.
Any more questions? Councilor Ferguson.
Yes, not a question. It is a question, sorry. At the CAO's opening remarks that there will be obviously follow-up with dollars attached to it and everything else, mm-hmm. so I won't go there. But in the presentation today, it's been identified that there's potentially four new positions,
mm-hmm.
HR, communications, facilities management, was just facilities management maintenance, and a deputy treasurer. So will those four be staffed out then in your new report with a dollar figure attached to it? Okay, so
yes.
I won't go there.
No, it'll be fully costed out.
Right.
And then we're gonna look at it generally in the context of a lot of those, it's productivity savings, right?
Absolutely, yes. Good, thank you.
Yep.
Further questions? I guess that's it for questions at this time.
Pardon me, sorry?
I guess that's it for questions at this time.
That's great.
Were you planning on another part of this session for building, or are we good?
No, we're
okay. Sorry, I misunderstood in the beginning. I thought there was two sections to your presentation.
No, just the one. What's that, sorry?
Just presentation and questions.
Yeah, just presentation and questions. We wanted to bring you the current state, get your feedback on that, answer your questions on that, and if everybody's comfortable with where we're at and where we're going, we'll proceed on.
Okay, one last time. Any more questions or comments? Okay, if not, a mover and seconder. That the presentation is received for information. Mayor Lowry and Councillor Maiden, all in favor? That's carried. Mover and second for adjournment. Mayor Lowry, Councillor Maiden, all in favor? We are adjourned. Thank you very much.